Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and I'm your host through our 12 Days of Doctrine. Today, on the 10th day of Doctrine, Special Doctrine Division is giving to you, our listeners, White Castle. Now, you can choose if that's the White Castle with the little burgers that taste really good any time after midnight, or the castle that we associate with the Corps of Engineers. Listen in on today's conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Aaron Anderson, Chief of Engineer Doctrine. We touch on how engineers write doctrine that encompasses new engineer formations, educate all branches on the complexity of gap crossings, and their work on human-machine integration. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
So first, I want to talk about what publications you're working on, what you guys are thinking about.
Yeah, so the first publication we're working on is Field Manual 334, which is Engineer Operations. For engineers, that's our biggest manual. It's our only field manual, and we're getting ready to go to signature draft. Hopefully, get those signatures and get it published. But really excited. It's been a few years since we revised that book, and this is really going to help us get back in line with the new FM3O. And then we're also starting to take a look at some of the RStruct changes and some of the new engineer formations that are going to happen. As we've already started, some units are already making that transition. So from an engineer standpoint, it's an interesting problem. If we look at the way that the force is going to be arrayed, engineers across all the different divisions are not going to look the same in any division. So okay. It's an interesting problem set. So
from a doctrinal perspective, where you're trying to kind of make an even playing field.
Yeah. So from a doctrinal perspective, we define what the different companies will look like, but that's about as deep as we go as far as defining formations. And in from the engineers, the way we're anticipating it to look like is that really the tasks that we've been given as engineers haven't changed. We haven't added any. We haven't subtracted any. We're being asked to do all the same things with the new RStruct that we were doing with the current formation that we have. What is going to change is now that we take BEBs out of the BCTs, we start making divisionally aligned engineers, is really we're going to put our emphasis back on command and support relationships. So how are all these different divisions going to employ their engineers, and how are they going to task organize them down to the BCTs in different relationships? And that's going to look different depending on each division. Some divisions got more engineers than others. Each division has its own personality and its own missions. And so from an engineer standpoint, what we're engineer doctrine, what we're really going to watch is we're going to watch over the next couple of years and gather those lessons learned on how 1st CAF employs their engineers versus 10th Mountain versus 82nd, 1st Armor. And then as we get ready to revise the book again, a few years down the road, we'll start incorporating those lessons learned. So it'll really be somewhat of an iterative process. But we're excited to at least put our foot in the water and launch into this version of FM 334 and start discussing it.
One thing we've talked about with other doctrine folks is observing different units and seeing what they're doing. So are you able to go and see their experimentation and see how they're changing things?
So sometimes we get out, we are getting a lot of good feedback given to us by the force. We have some really great innovation efforts going on out at Fort Liberty. They've been doing a lot of great work out there looking at things like robotic breaching in the future. So we get tied into that so we can stay a step ahead. Our partners down at Fort Cavazos in 36 Engineer Brigade, they give us a lot of feedback. They're really leading the way for combined arms mobility and how wet gap crossing and a lot of what we see in ATP 390.4, which is our combined arms mobility book that we're revising. They are providing a lot of great feedback for that book and really helping us out, especially for somebody like myself who came from more of a light background. They're helping fill that gap and really address, like, hey, where's doctrine hitting out of the park and where are there some gaps in doctrine? Because large-scale wet gap crossings are something that in the coin environment we didn't have to do a lot of. So we're really getting back to it, and they're being great partners as far as not only telling us what's working now, but also looking at the old doctrine and identifying terminology and graphic control measures and other things that we possibly may need to bring back into the new manual.
When you say old doctrine, some people have talked about you know, World War II, 1950s. Are you talking that old doctrine?
So I've personally looked back, I would say, into the 80s and 90s. We haven't yet had to go back to World War II. We're not afraid to. We have the manuals. But I think really we're looking pre-Global War on Terror, when we were concentrating more on the bridging assets in training, at least. And so that I would say the 90s is probably our sweet spot right now.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit more in detail of what you're changing or potentially will change with the White Gap Crossing?
Sure. Yeah. So for White Gap Crossing, as far as the book itself, 390.4, the Combined Arms Mobility Book, ATP, is right now it's set up in a number of chapters, right? The first chapter talks about the fundamentals, gives some general overview characteristics, the types of gap crossing. And then the next chapter is like a planning chapter. And then we even talk some bridging later on in the book. And it's very disjointed and it's not streamlined so that anybody can pick up the book, read a single chapter, and just understand gap crossing, soup to nuts in one source. And so that's the first thing we did is we took those chapters, we put them together, stripped out what didn't need to be in the planning chapter, and just came up with the fundamentals and planning gap crossing chapter, which was great. The second thing we did is the book was very much written a couple years ago with a division wet gap crossing as the primary example. And so the whole chapter on planning was a division wet gap crossing. We've since backed that out a little bit, recognizing that gap crossing can happen at a number of echelons. It could be a corps-driven effort. It can go all the way down to the brigade. Where as we go into the future of engineers, we're looking to put more bridging assets even at some of those lower echelons. So as we do that, we wanted to make sure that our doctrine was applicable across all echelons. So we took out a lot of that verbiage that was specific to a division example and made it applicable across all echelons. What we did do is we left some of the planning factors for a division wet gap crossing in. One of the challenges that we face as a doctrine writer, as we try to educate the force on gap crossings once again, is that people have a hard time without the example understanding the true scope and scale of how big a wet gap crossing could be. The wet gap crossing is not just the bridge. And the bridge is not the final objective. You have all the actions that lead up to the gap itself, traffic control measures, the different routes, the holding areas, the waiting areas, the assembly areas, and especially in this day and age where we talk a lot about dispersing and counter-UAS, those are getting even bigger, right? So, we're talking miles before we even get to the gap. And then on the other side of it, talk about the gap not being the objective, really we're trying to get to the break outline. We're trying to get the breakout forced, get to the bridge headline and get the breakout force past the bridge headline. And as we do that, we're talking intermediate, far side objective, exit bank objective, intermediate objectives, all the way to the bridgehead objective. In some cases, the way our doctrine currently defines it, you could look at a division gap crossing as an example being 30 miles long. And so we wanted to leave that kind of numbering system in the doctrine because it's hard for people to wrap their head around the true scope and scale of a wet gap unless we give them something to anchor to. So we're pretty clear. We let everybody know that, hey, this is a way. This is an example. It's not your gap may be bigger or smaller, but we want them to understand the complexity of a gap crossing. And it also helps us as engineers and engineer doctrine to drive home the point that a gap crossing is a true combined arms activity. It involves MPs and infantry and electronic warfare. It's everybody has a role in the gap crossing. The engineers typically just get the light shined on them a little bit because we have the bridge, right? And the bridge is the shiny object down there. But that being said, it's a lot more complicated, involves a lot more than just the bridge itself.
So is the Combined Arms Mobility Pub directed towards engineers or is the audience commanders and staffs?
So the audience is commanders and staffs. It is owned and shepherded by the Engineer Doctrine. It's our book, but really it's a 390 series. So it belongs in the Tactics series. And so that's the way we see the book and the way we try to align the book is to make sure that it's well nested within 3-90, And really, it's meant for engineers to pick up, but it's also meant for those maneuver commanders and staff to pick up and understand their role in gap crossing or breaching operations, but then also how they could properly employ engineers and other forces that take part in those activities.
Can you talk a little bit more detail about, like, your collaboration efforts? Because you talked, you know, we're talking experimentation, probably MCTP warfighters. So how are you getting that feedback?
Yes, so we, like I said, we have engineer units that partner with us. So we get feedback from the force. They've done some great exercises live out there. We also participate. There's exercises that are done right on Fort Leonard Wood. So last December, they did a virtual exercise on Fort Leonard Wood. We were able to participate, gather a lot of lessons learned from that way. And then we're also even learning lessons from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So our Engineering Research and Development Center, ERDCT, based out of Mississippi, they're doing a lot of work now because tanks aren't getting any lighter, but our bridges are still the same bridges we've had in the inventory. So they're doing a lot of work testing out our bridges to make sure that they can still handle the weight of the newest tanks. And do we need to make them bigger? Do we need to add more bays so that the raft is bigger so that it has more float capacity? And so we're getting a lot of lessons back from them, too, so we can update our charts within the book and make sure that we're still able to handle the current capability set that we have on the ground. There's a lot of work, as there are with the other branches and the other centers of excellence, with the human-machine integration. So we're doing a lot of exercises right now and trying to stay involved with our CDID and our Army's Future Command Element on Fort Leonard Wood as they start looking at what does automated or human-machine integrated formations look like for whether it be breaching, construction, or ultimately bridging even going 2030 out to 2040. And really, it's a unique problem set for us. One, it helps us as engineer doctoring get involved early with those conversations because we can baseline those groups before they launch into their efforts. But then it also gives us a view of the future on where we may need to start steering our doctrine, where may our doctrine gives us additional things to consider. So one of the things that we're looking at, which ties into both gap crossing, but then another one of our publications we're working on, which is ATP 337-34, the survivability book, is obscuration. And what does obscuration truly mean this day and age? So, I mean, it's not just smoke and dust as we've traditionally looked at it, right? You know, back in the 90s, you'd have the smoke generator, you've heard a lot of smoke. Nobody could see the bridge and where it was going in exactly, at least. And we put it in. Well, now with UASs flying all that through the air, electronic warfare measures, you know, signatures, everything else that's out there in the battlefield, are we still able to achieve obscuration effects the same way that we have in the past? And if not, what do we have to do? Are there new capabilities? Are there just new doctrinal ways of thinking about it? How do we address it? So being tied into these conversations with folks as they look at these future capabilities to 2030 and 2040 help us as engineer doctrine writers think through in these different problem sets that may be on the horizon, or maybe they're even here today, and say, okay, well, how are we going to address this, if address it at all, or at least bring the problem to light so that people know it's a consideration to think about?
Yeah, wow. Obscuration. What else is going on that listeners should know about?
I think it's an exciting time to be an engineer. There's a lot going on. As we kind of talked about with the RSTRC changes, really no two divisions are going to look exactly alike with the engineers that they have. Some will have more engineers, some will have less engineers, but I think there's a lot of opportunity in the engineer regiment right now, and we're going to see that going forward to kind of shape our destiny in the shape of those command support relationships and the employment of engineers. And so from engineer doctrine, it's exciting to be a part of that, to be on the front end of it and get to write a little bit about it and start to address it. But then also sit in the position that we're in to be able to watch it unfold and capture all that so that we learn these lessons. And we're excited for the future, and we're looking forward to the next couple of years for sure.
I feel like you're the most optimistic engineer I've come across in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, right, like, I mean, we can call it what it is, right? The engineers did at a net level, we have less, we're going to have less engineers than we did in the past, right? And that's not a secret to anybody. But it doesn't mean that there's not opportunities for folks out there, for engineers, for formations to redefine and shape ourselves in new and exciting ways. You know, it's the human machine integration piece, the robotics that are coming out, right? We do a lot of high risk missions, whether it's gap crossing or whether it's breaching, right? And so a lot of that technology, a lot of these technology solutions are going to be geared and help really help engineers. And that's exciting, right? Like innovation's a really hot topic. And we're on the forefront of that as engineers, because historically we've been a branch that, you know, relies on equipment to do our job. And so as we look at future mission sets, we're going to need those future capabilities to also do our job. So I truly believe there's a lot of opportunities within the regiment. And so it's exciting to capture them and be a part of it with Doctrine and help shape that for the future Army.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
Just like writing new Doctrine is a team effort, breaking Doctrine takes a team. Without the crew and Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.